Nashville, late October. An equally bad mistake, for me at least, came in our investigation of Bert Poole. By the end of the summer, tons of material had already been gathered on Poole. Poole, the educator said, had a low but certainly not a defective intellect. Poole, the psychologist said, was under strong pressures to realize himself in some way. Poole had an ambiguous and inconsistent attitude toward Jimmy Horn. Poole had been addicted to adventure comic books as a boy. Poole had been in homosexual panic at the time of the shooting. But Moses Reed felt that we needed more information, lifestyle material, in cold blood detail. Poole was fucked up, Reed said, but I'm convinced that Poole wasn't simply a nut. So I spent nearly 2 weeks contacting Bert Poole's relatives and his friends. His mother and father had already refused interviews to the major magazines and other newspapers, but Lewis felt I ought to approach them anyway. He reasoned that I was the only one working under the assumption that their son might not be a murderer. During 1 week in October, I reached Mrs. Helen Poole several times on the telephone. She was courteous and cooperative, but she always ended up telling me the same thing. Dr. Poole is making all the decisions about Bert, but Dr. Poole isn't at home right now. At 8 a.m., 12 noon, 7 p.m., 10 p.m., Dr. Poole was never home. One night, though, I decided I had to camp out at the Pooles and find out some things for myself. Their home was a modest split level on Whipland Road in Nashville's Brentwood section. It was a very neat place, kept up, certainly in character for a divinity school professor. I parked across the street from the Pooles, and I immediately got a lot of strange looks from the neighbors. One or two of them came by and gave me lectures on privacy. Then around 11 o'clock, with me just about to go under from an overdose of AM radio, Dr. Leland Poole finally turned into his driveway. The taillights of his Pontiac station wagon flashed red. The heavy car scraped bottom on the street's drainage ditch. Then he eased it up in front of his porch. No lights were on outside the house, so I couldn't get a good look at Dr. Poole. The only detail I caught was that he wore eyeglasses. It was difficult connecting the man in his house with Bert Poole or the shooting of Horn. Moments after he went inside, I saw him in the living room window. He was tall, very tall, balding, still holding his briefcase. He was staring directly at my car. I opened the car door and let him see me. Then I got out of the car and walked over the dark lawn. At first, I thought the Pooles weren't going to answer the doorbell. They hadn't turned on the porch light, and I could feel water bugs crawling over my shoes. Then a dim yellow light popped on over my head. Mosquitoes went to it like candy. Leland Poole, still in his summer suit and tie, opened the front door. Poole's father was slightly shorter than I am, maybe 6'4", but he didn't slouch. He was able to look me directly in the eyes. "I assume you a reporter?" He spoke with a deep South gentleman's accent. He then listened politely as I told him my name and my mission. "Well, Mr. Jones," he said then, "I have read your articles." I waited for elaboration on that, but only a long pause came. It was a silent time during which Dr. Poole kept his mouth open slightly. "I should tell you," he eventually spoke again, "that our lawyer, Mr. Huddlestone, our lawyer, has asked us not to give out any interviews, neither Helen or myself, Mr. Jones. It is Mr. Huddlestone's position that interviews would not be in our best interest, nor would they be best for Bert." To be quite candid, the professor took in a gasp of night air. I don't believe that I could. To be candid, I leave this house with my briefcase each morning. And I kiss Helen goodbye. And Mr. Jones, without giving her any indication that I'm going any place other than my office or to the James Tate Library on the campus, I drive down to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I sit around a farmhouse my father left me a few years back. Dr. Poole then began to cry. His crying made no sound. He neither wiped away the tears nor tried to shut me outside. "I just clock watch," he said.